When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
I want to thank all the labor unions here in Dane County that help keep SlysOffice.com up and going so you keep up to date. Whether it be the Madison Firefighters, Local 311, or the Madison Teamsters, Local 695, or our friends at Madison Teachers Incorporated. These are some of the most active local unions who organize, and constantly stand up for workers. Thank you from SlysOffice.com.
Welcome to another podcast at SlysOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers and great local sponsors like the Axley Law Firm and St. Vincent de Paul. Joining us now, Associate Editor of the Capital Times, John Nichols. John, let's talk about the governor's race before we get to any national politics. Scott Walker was on, if that reminds you of anything, Scott Walker was on Mike Goucher's program over the weekend. First of all, here is Scott Walker talking about Roy Moore.
So this is the candidate for U.S. Senate, Republican candidate in Alabama, and these stories come out of the Washington Post that say he made advances toward a 14-year-old and several other teenage girls. Should he step aside?
If it's true, I mean, that's a great qualifier. I don't know all the facts.
How are you going to know that?
I don't know.
I hear people saying if it's true, there are 30
sources.
Well,
the reason I say that is because
women.
Right. I mean, if it's true, and I don't know. I mean, different circumstances, but remember years ago, right the week and a half before the recall election, at a gaggle I had in Germantown, I remember just up the way, a reporter said to me, "What do you think of these online reports that say you had a love child in college?" Well, it wasn't true. It was a Scott Walker, a Scott P. Walker. I'm Scott Kevin Walker. But you look at things like that that come out at the last minute and you think, well, of course that wasn't true. And I wanted the case to point it out. And once it was cleared up, it wasn't. So I don't know if it's true. But if it is, obviously, you should step aside. And I think Republicans would be prepared to do that. But I don't think Republicans should be judged by him any more than Democrats should be judged by Anthony Weiner or Elliot Spitzer or any others who've had sex scandals or presumed sex scandals on the left or the right. If it's true and he falls in that category, then we should denounce all of them.
Wow, love child. I was kind of laughed about that story because I didn't believe it was true because I didn't think it was possible.
It was absurd. And but it's a very interesting thing. Listen to what the governor said there. He said back before the recall, back some years ago, there's a gaggle
in Germantown.
Yeah. If somebody asked me about an online rumor, okay? Put that where that is.
Uh-huh.
Now we've got the Washington Post with multiple sources, a meticulously researched story that, you know, clearly is grounded in, you know, a lot of people coming forward, not just one, and an immense amount of detail. Now being backed up on a daily basis by more people stepping up, including prosecutors, people from Roy Moore's own office, police officers and others stepping up now saying, yeah, there's this problem with Roy Moore back in when he was in his 30s. Another woman stepping up, obviously, after Scott Walker was on TV. So I'll give him that space. But to compare somebody asking about an online rumor with a meticulously reported Washington Post report, that's a big difference. You know what I'm saying? I understand the governor saying, yeah, people can gin up lies. They can gin up fantasies. It's happened. You know, people have tried to attack him unfairly. I understand the governor saying that. He has every right to say that. But he's got to have some perspective here. And I think it's interesting that in the couple days since he did that interview with Mike Goucher, it appears he has evolved with much of the Republican Party toward an understanding that the if it's true line didn't really work as regards Roy Moore.
Here is Scott Walker feigning anger over outside money.
A few months ago, we were talking about how nobody wanted to run against you, and now it seems like everybody wants to run against you. I think we're up to about 8 candidates, maybe another one, Malin Mitchell on Monday, possibly even Paul Soglin at some point in the future. What do you make of that?
At some point, I think every Democrat in the state's going to be running, or at least every elected one, or would be elected one. I mean, to me, they're all the same. They're all far to the left. They'll all take us back, as we said before, to the kind of policies we saw that lost us 133,000 jobs in the 4 years before we took office. What I'm more concerned about is whatever the number is, because I think some of them are looking at this saying, I can beat that field, and so they're going to add more because they're not satisfied. There's no clear front runner. No one's clearing the field out there.
Or they think you're vulnerable.
Well, I think they would argue that, and maybe it's a combination of both in their minds. But I think if you really look at the biggest fear that I and I think a lot of our supporters have is not the candidate, it's the outside money. I mean, you've got one group who was involved last Tuesday in the gubernatorial elections, particularly in Virginia. That's a group that Terry McAuliffe is involved in, along with the former president, former attorney general. Their public goal is to raise $500 million to take on me and 12 other Republican governors next year. And then you've got one other group, the New York Times reported on this summer, SEIU, one of the nation's largest unions, is planning to spend $100 million going after Midwestern Republican governors, which we can presume I'm one of those.
But you're not going to be hurting for money.
Well, except for the fact that, you know, there's 36 races for governor next year. 26 are currently held by Republicans. About half are in states where they're term limited. So really big states like Ohio, Florida, Michigan, those are going to be costly elections. The other half are like me. They can run for re-election. So in terms of external money, I think I'm going to be left pretty much on my own to raise money here in the state of Wisconsin. And that's why our argument when I went around the state this past week is to counter that outside money, I need an army of grassroots volunteers. It's why we've seen people come out of the woodwork to help us. You know, people go all the time to our website, scottwalker.com, and sign up and say, we're going to help you go door to door and counter that message. Because a lot of those groups, sure, they'd like to help other candidates for governor in other states, but they'd like to take me out for a lot of reasons far bigger than just this election.
Yeah, his campaign's going to be just like Russ Feingold's in 1992, isn't it?
look. The fact of the matter is that the one thing that Democrats and Republicans say, aside from Scott Walker in that interview, I mean, literally, Republican operatives being interviewed about the gubernatorial race say is, well, Scott Walker's a great fundraiser. I mean, there's never any question that Scott Walker will proportionally, obviously Wisconsin being a smaller state than some, sort of say Illinois, but Scott Walker will proportionally raise money at the top tier of gubernatorial races in the country. He will have, you know, dollar per voter, one of the highest levels in the country. He always has. And this isn't even something that plays out of the recall or you know, things that happened after he was elected governor. The 2010 race that made him governor saw an unprecedented amount of spending in Wisconsin. And records were broken, and then records were broken again in ensuing races. And so, you know, what the governor's doing there is something that he's done throughout his tenure, and that is to try and create the fantasy that he is a victim, that he is, you know, some sort of little delicate snowflake floating through our politics. And that's just not the case. The thing about Scott Walker is he is not good at being governor. That's just the truth. He talks about jobs lost before he was governor. He doesn't talk about the incredible slow growth since he's been governor.
Well, I think it's amazing that he never gets challenged on, you know, what Democratic policy cost 130,000 yeah. jobs in Wisconsin. Now, we had a national recession bordering
on depression.
The
meltdown of the global economy. Right? Yeah, no, the meltdown of the global economy was it, and it happened at Wisconsin. The interesting thing is that Wisconsin was doing not, you know, certainly not well in the aftermath of that, but as compared to many other states, it was doing better than a lot of other states. And, you know, Scott Walker came in, and as other states, you know, really kind of kicked in and took off, states like Minnesota, Wisconsin struggled under Walker. So he's not good at governing, but, and this is the fundamental, and nobody questions this, he's very good at campaigning.
He's but he's concerned about outside money.
Yeah, that's a silly concern. Look, if he's concerned about outside money, I would bet you that if he went to, you know, the leaders of the Democratic caucuses in the state assembly and the state senate and said, you know, I want to work with you to, in the next week, pass the toughest campaign finance laws in the country, using every avenue we can to shut down outside money, I think he'd have allies. Yeah. Do you have any doubt that they jump into action to help him, you know, Jen Schilling and other folks jump into action to help him put those laws on the books? I don't. So if he's really concerned about outside money, he can do it right now. He can, in the next week, he can solve the problem.
All right. He's obviously very...
Or at least address the problem.
He's obviously very concerned about his reelection. This is the worst climate he's ever had to run in. He's had very favorable climates in his previous three elections. So, Maylin Mitchell got in the race. We're recording this Tuesday morning, got in Monday afternoon. Paul Soglin has said he's going to run. We have Tony Evers. We have Andy Gronick. We have Dana Wachs. We have Mike McCabe. We have a whole list of candidates right now. Obviously, Kathleen Vinehout. I've never seen anything like this. I don't think there's a time in Wisconsin history that so many people were running in one party for governor.
No, it's a very uncommon thing, and I've paid a lot of attention to this over the years. One of the things that is true is that no Democrat has won the governorship in modern times. At least since the 1960s, without going through a multi-candidate primary. It is true that when the modern Democratic Party was taking shape in the 50s and the first years of the 60s, you know, you did have a situation where Gaylord Nelson didn't have a lot of opposition. You know, he came in there, and then John Reynolds picked up from him. But, you know, the last 50 years, used as an example, Pat Lucey had a really tough primary with Don Peterson back in 1970. In 78, Marty Schreiber, of course, he didn't make it through, but he had a primary. 82, there was a tough primary that Tony Earle came out of, very serious, very competitive primary. And then in 2002, when Jim Doyle came through, he had a very intense primary with Tom Barrett and with Kathleen Falk. And so the fact of the matter is that in this state, gubernatorial nominees of the Democratic Party, and frankly, mostly more often than not of the Republican Party, have to come through serious primaries. So there's nothing wrong with a primary. What's fascinating about this one is that it's a multi-candidate field that has grown so large with so many candidates that it does create new complexities, or at least new issues to pay attention to. I think Walker is right about something. And that is that because there's no clear front runner, more people get in, right? It's like becomes for, I think, a lot of people something that looks like an easier race, because if this race doesn't gel, if it doesn't develop a front runner, you could win it with 15-20% of the vote. And that, for if you're a candidate without a lot of money or with some sort of idea or base of supporters, that's an attractive race to get into. But for the Democratic Party, it does pose challenges and issues. The party has to, at least party activists, party believers, have to figure out, who they want as a nominee. Yeah, that's all the factors we've talked about previously. But B, who of these candidates would be the strongest against Scott Walker? And so I think the multi-candidate field creates a very different dynamic. Generally, I think primaries are great, and I've got no problem with this one. But I would say that for Democratic voters, they have to think a little bit here. You know, how do you vote for what you want in a primary while at the same time making sure that your nominee is the strongest nominee?
You find it instructive that Paul Soglin, Maylin Mitchell, and Tony Evers have given very tepid responses about repealing Act 10. Not aspirational. You know, it's they're being very, very downbeat about making a major move to repeal that legislation. It's very un-Bernie-like. Let's put it that way.
Right.
Right?
Absolutely.
And yet, Andy Gronick, Dana Wachs, and some of the other candidates have been very firm in their verbiage about repealing Act 10.
That's exactly right. And look, this is a very, very simple model. It's so long ago, it's getting ridiculous, but 25 years ago, there were those of us who said, you do this trade policies the way you're doing, you are going to do tremendous damage to the American economy. We were right. There's no question of that. 10 years ago, a little under 10 years ago, there were a lot of us who said, you gut out unions, you're going to do tremendous damage to wages and to the economic security of families. And we are proven right on a daily basis. We will continue to be proven right. And so here's the bottom line. If you're running for governor of Wisconsin and you cannot say, it's not just Act 10. I mean, Act 10 is actually a subset of something much bigger.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
It's also right to work.
Right.
Right? And restoring prevailing wage where it's been assaulted and restoring, you know, all of the protections for workers, not, and I'm going to emphasize this, not merely because you respect workers and you should respect their right to organize and you should respect that the countries around the world with which we would want to compare ourselves, you know, countries like Germany that have come through quite strongly as manufacturing countries and tech companies and such. Countries with which we want to compare ourselves have strong unions. So the thing is, yeah, you want to protect workers, but you also want to recognize that having solid labor laws, having protections for trade unionism, protections for prevailing wage, protections for public employees, those things make your state stronger. There's simply no question of that. And if the Democratic nominee for governor cannot say that, right, and cannot deliver that message clearly and effectively, then that person is running the sort of tepid, stumbling, old-fashioned Democratic campaign that traditionally loses.
We'll
very
take
simple.
A break.
This is John, not hard stuff.
We'll take a break. John Nichols, Capital Times, and The Nation with us at SliceOffice.com. We're back at SliceOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers. John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation with us. I don't honestly even know where to begin with Donald Trump. Donald Trump just came back from Asia. And this is so remarkable and so destructive. I'm just, here's Canadian coverage of it, just to give you a little.
Not exactly a warm welcome for the U.S. president. Hundreds of protesters in Manila clashing with riot police and denouncing Donald Trump as a warmonger. But inside, on the red carpet at this glitzy gala, Trump's meeting a leader just as controversial as he is. They're crooning away. Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte singing to Trump.
The orders of the Commander-in-Chief of the United States.
On his final stop in what's been a highly scripted trip, Trump unleashed a Twitter bomb, blasting critics as haters and fools who question his friendly approach to Russia.
I think he's giving Putin a pass, and I think it demonstrates to Mr. Putin that Donald Trump can be played by foreign leaders who are going to appeal to his ego.
Former intelligence officials firing back at Trump, who on Air Force One singled them out as political hacks.
It's very clear that the Russians interfered in the election, and it's still puzzling as to why Mr. Trump does not acknowledge that.
Puzzling indeed. After his chummy sideline meetings with Vladimir Putin in Vietnam, Trump seemed to buy Putin's denial over election meddling, only to do an about-face before the cameras.
I believe that he feels that he and Russia did not meddle in the election. As to whether I believe it or not, I'm with our agencies.
Trump's hurled insults at just about everyone, but refuses to say a bad word about Putin, dismissing the Russian investigation as a Democratic hit job.
No, he seems very susceptible to rolling out the red carpet and honor guards and all this, all the trappings. Yes, I do think both the Chinese and the Russians think they can play him.
Trump says he wants better relations with Russia. Other presidents have tried, but two former intelligence chiefs say cozying up to a former KGB agent is not only naive, Sandy, it puts the U.S. in danger.
Whoa, how about that?
Well, I was like a straight-on news report that compares the president of the United States to the guy who's, you know, accused of, you know, like, murdering people in the streets of this country, in the Philippines. And you know, I mean, if you just read the press, on, you know, this Duterte guy. It's like, I don't think Trump's ever been so insulted. You and I have never insulted Trump so thoroughly as that report right there. So he's meeting with someone very like him. Like, whoa, let's hope not. But, you know, look, here's the deeper component of that report, and that, and where we get to some things that Trump said and did that, you know, are deeply concerning. I mean, he went by name and started, you know, attacking the intelligence people. You realize that when you get into a game where you're at one time saying that you stand with our intelligence people, right, and what they've said about the Russian interference, and then, you know, around the same time, you're like going name by name of picking on intelligence people who are, you know, backing up these points and reasserting these points. The messages that he is sending at this point are so conflicted and so chaotic that I don't think you can say, and this is a big deal for the United States, I don't think you can say that the United States has a clear policy as regards Russian interference in our elections. And that's a bizarre situation because no matter where you line up on this, no matter how much Russian interference you thought there was, no matter what you think the Russians were doing or trying to do, what is absolutely clear is that we have a vulnerable election system in the United States. And for the president to be sending such incredibly mixed signals to keep the debate open, it's an absurdity. What he should be saying is very, very simple. If he wants to, I'm not saying this is right, but he should say, you know, look, I don't know the extent of Russian interference. Our intelligence people say there was, you know, Putin says he, you know, wasn't really trying to use all these different things. Here's what I know we should do. Here's what I know we must do. And that is enact legislation that protects our electoral system from outside meddling and interferences to the best of our ability. That legislation has been proposed by Congressman Mark Pocan from Wisconsin and other members of Congress. They want to make our electoral system the equivalent of a public utility. And just as we protect public utilities from, you know, internet meddling and from, you know, online threats and from digital threats and from all sorts of other threats, right? Pocan is saying we have to protect our election system. We could move on that right away, you know? And if the president wants to move away from the discussion about what happened in 2016, as it seems very clear he does desire to do, and as he says, you have to move forward. Well, you have to move forward to something. And what Trump seems to be moving forward to is a higher level of faith in what Putin says to him than what people who have dedicated their lives to national security say to him.
You think any of this caught Robert Mueller's attention?
I mean, suspect that Mueller takes it all in. But you know what? I know an interesting thing about Mueller. If I'm right about him, he's so many steps ahead of where Trump is on any given day that most of what Trump says and does is probably a footnote.
It certainly lays down the predicate, that's for sure.
Your
favorite vice president, Mike Pence, once again has
been... that's not fair. Cheney will always be first in my
Okay. Mind. All right. Your second most favorite vice president, Mike Pence. Now having some problems because, once again, and he was in friendly confines here. This was on Fox and Friends. Here's what he said about WikiLeaks.
This law has been an abysmal failure. It hasn't reduced or eliminated drinking. It has simply driven it underground.
That would be the wrong clip.
Yeah, but I like that.
Some have suggested on the left that all this bad stuff about Hillary, nothing bad about Trump, that your campaign is in cahoots with WikiLeaks.
Nothing could be further from the truth. I think all of us have, have had concerns about WikiLeaks over the years.
Concerns. Oh, my gosh. Sounds a little like Wolf Blitzer there. All of us have had concerns. Look, here's the bottom line. Mike Pence is in as much or more trouble than Donald Trump will ever be. Mike Pence is so boring that people don't cover him very much. But when you look at, you know, how he's lined up and stuff, the excuses he's made, the interventions that he's made, his long-term ties to Paul Manafort and many of the people who've gotten wrapped up in the current scandals and indictments. So it's almost anything that Mike Pence says at this point has to be taken, you know, with a huge grain of salt. And as regards WikiLeaks, look, there have been revelations. There's going to be, continue to be revelations. And the fact of the matter is, if WikiLeaks was in direct contact with Donald Trump Jr., as appears to be the case, as has the report suggested, then that's got to be examined, not because it's Donald Trump Jr. per se, but because it takes you, you know, deep into the Trump campaign. And is there a coordination there? If there's a coordination there, then you look at the question of WikiLeaks and whatever coordination there might be or ties to foreign interests. I mean, this is the bridge, right? I mean, it's and the thing that legitimizes that examination or that concern is, of course, those, you know, tape reels from Donald Trump during the 2016 campaign.
Are you talking about this?
Russia, if you're listening, I hope you're able to find the 30,000 emails that are missing.
And all you have to do is take a look at WikiLeaks.
This just came out. WikiLeaks. I love WikiLeaks. Amazing how nothing's secret today when you talk about the internet.
WikiLeaks.
They've got to start talking about WikiLeaks.
The wonder of WikiLeaks.
Oh, we love WikiLeaks.
You know, he's got a big mouth.
You know, it really is haunting. And the only question is, now I realize that Fox is a challenge network. they just have some things they're not very good at. But I would suggest that when Mike Pence is sitting there and you ask him about WikiLeaks, I don't know how people prepare for interviews, but my own prep on an interview like that, I would have the list of the Trump quotes to follow up with and say, Mr. Vice President, I know no one takes you seriously, but
okay, we've only
something so absurd.
We've only got a couple minutes here, but I want to play this clip from Beverly Young Nelson. She's a waitress that is making an allegation about sexual assault with Roy Moore.
Mr. Moore reached over and began groping me and putting his hands on my breast. I tried to open my car door to leave, but he reached over and he locked it so I could not get out. I tried fighting him off while yelling at him to stop. But instead of stopping, he began squeezing my neck, attempting to force my head onto his crotch. I continued to struggle. I was determined that I was not going to allow him to force me to have sex with him. He said, "You're just a child." And he said, "I am the district attorney of Etowah County. And if you tell anyone about this, no one will ever believe you."
Roy Moore is now doing his best Sergeant Schultz.
He wrote in my yearbook as follows: "To a sweeter, more beautiful girl, I could not say Merry Christmas. Christmas 1977, love, Roy Moore, Old Hickory House." And it signed it, Roy Moore, D.A.
People of Alabama know me. They know my character. They know what I've stood for in the political world for over 40 years. And I can tell you without hesitation, this is absolutely false. I never did what she said I did. I don't even know the woman. I don't know anything about her. I don't even know where the restaurant is or was. And if you look at this situation, you'll see that because I'm 11 points ahead, or 10 or 11 points ahead, this race being just 28 days off, that this is a political maneuver.
Has he read the polls lately?
They're getting closer. I mean, that 11-point thing is an outlier, and certainly not where we're at. We haven't really had a lot of good polling in the last day or so, but I suspect that...
I think things are quite fluid right now.
Yes, I think the polls are going to show this to be a very, very close race. And might even, you know, I think Doug Jones might even be, might have a potential to pull ahead. Look, that woman's statement was in and of itself very powerful. And, you know, it seemed, to me at least, it seemed very genuine. But what's important to note here, and I think maybe it's somewhat undernoted when people talk about this, it's backed up by that yearbook, you know, and by an awful lot of other details that you know, really bring this all the way right up to Roy Moore's door, so to speak. And Moore is issuing statements, not answering questions. He was asked last night, you know, would he testify under oath about this? And obviously the woman that we heard from a moment ago said she would testify. And so it's, look, I think what you're looking at here is a situation with Roy Moore where the key was actually in his statement there, where he said, the people of Alabama have known me for decades, and, you know, obviously they voted for him. That is not a compliment to the people of Alabama, because Roy Moore has always been an incredibly bad player. Lots of personal scandals, lots of political scandals, an incredible disregard for the rule of law. Now, this intensive focus, which I think goes beyond Moore to this broader question of, you know, what does Alabama want to be when it grows up? You know, does it really want to validate this? It's a big deal. And I think that if things continue on the trajectory they are on, Doug Jones can win this race. The important thing now is that it doesn't get gamed with lies and fantasies from Washington by Republicans saying, oh, if Roy Moore gets elected, we might expel him, or we might refuse to seat him, or say, whatever type game they want to play. There's one way to make sure that Roy Moore doesn't get to the United States Senate, and that is for Republicans to do what Jeff Flake did. And what Jeff Flake did yesterday was say, yeah, if it was between Roy Moore and a Democrat, I'd back the Democrat. And that message needs to come down from Washington, not to all these games about, you know, moving elections or who you'd seat or write-in candidates. And frankly, it has to come from Donald Trump as well as members of the Senate. Until it does, Roy Moore is the Republican candidate.
Is it fair to me to ask this? We're over time, but is it fair to me to ask the question? And because Beverly Young Nelson made a statement that, in fact, that she had voted for Donald Trump. And it's interesting to me that considering what she had experienced with Roy Moore, as well as several of these other women, did they not hear the women talking about Donald Trump? And on the Democratic side, I will tell you, I watched Lisa Myers interview Juanita Broderick, and I found Juanita Broderick's testimony every bit as compelling as Beverly Young Nelson's.
Yeah, you know, I think what you're raising...
And when I brought it up at the time, I was called a bad Democrat.
Well, yeah, and there's nothing wrong with being that. Look, there's a column in the New York Times today written by Michelle Goldberg that's headlined, I Believe Juanita. And so I do think people are revisiting some of these issues. But
you see the story about George Herbert Walker Bush this morning?
I know.
I mean, we got a problem in this country.
Yeah, and you know who tried to raise that, the stuff about George Herbert Walker Bush way back in 1988? Donna Brazile. You go back and read the story of the 88 campaign, she got in trouble as a Dukakis manager for asking the press why they weren't covering all this stuff with George Herbert Walker Bush. She was sort of hounded out of the scene for that. And what I would say is this. Don't judge this woman in Alabama who is stepping up now by who she voted for, how she responded to things in the past.
I'm not judging her. It's just interesting to me how people view these things.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, we're in an evolutionary moment, right? People are stepping up and saying things that are hard to say, and respect that they're doing that. And that, yeah, you can find things where you say, oh, well, why didn't you do it then? Or why didn't you do that? It's happening now. It's important in the context that we're talking about. And I saw, I think I was CNN last night. I thought there was a very good exchange where actually a former Republican operative was talking about all this stuff. And she was being very, very critical of Roy Moore. And then somebody else on the panel said, yeah, but what about Anthony Weiner? What about all this? And he started going back. And she said, don't do that, right? We can accept there were problems in the past and that there are continue to be problems. And these are real. And we can talk about them. But don't do it as, let's shut down this conversation because that happened, right? Or let's quote unquote put this in perspective. No, we have a special election for the U.S. Senate occurring on December 12th. Revelations are coming out. They're of significant interest as regards that election.
All right.
Let's talk about them, and let's talk about how Roy Moore responds to them.
Got to wrap it up. John Nichols from the Capital Times and the Nation. Thanks for coming to SliceOffice.com.
SliceOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
Making stuff matters, because when we make things in America, America makes it. American workers and families make it. Our communities make it. Consider this. For every one manufacturing job in our communities, 5 more jobs are supported. Manufacturing jobs pay an average of 10 to 50% more than service sector jobs. That allows working families to support their local businesses, schools, emergency services, and more. Creating 2.5 million new manufacturing jobs would mean at least $100 billion for our economy over the next decade. Domestic manufacturing is the green economy. It's among the cleanest, most efficient, and productive in the world. That's why the United Steelworkers and our more than 1 million members and retirees are fighting so hard to protect and grow manufacturing. Because making stuff really does matter. Join our fight. Visit usw.org and like us at facebook.com/steelworkers. Support American manufacturing. Buy American. Buy Union.